talk today was given by Venerable Ajahn Dewey, who was one of the senior disciples of Venerable Ajahn Anand, who lives here at Wat Mapjan, oversees many of the construction projects. He's been a monk for over 30 years, and he told some stories about his life as well, so I'll be speaking in the first person for ease of listening. So greetings and the Dhamma to all of you. So today I've been given the opportunity, invited by Venerable Ajahn Anand, to give a talk on the Dhamma. And I didn't know what to talk about. I'm not someone who is used to talking on Dhamma like this, but I was talking to Kruba Michael just before coming up here, and Kruba Michael suggested to talk about my biography a bit, of why I came to Wat Mapjan and what it was like in the early days 30 years ago here. And 30 years ago, I would say Wat Mapjan was also is quite a good place to be. And for myself, before I ordained, I did not have the intent to ordain. It was more of following the customs of the Thai culture. So I'm not sure if it's similar in Singapore or Malaysia. But for myself, I was born in northeast Thailand, in Isan, in the Sisaket province. And then I grew up more in the central part of Thailand, like Chachang Sao province. And my mother and father were not wealthy. But my mother and father, they wanted to have their eldest child ordained. But for myself, I felt like I did not want this. But there was one occasion I was studying in Bangkok, and at that time I had a girlfriend, and my mother called, and the phone was ringing, and my girlfriend was the one who answered the phone. And so my mother heard a woman's voice over the phone and asked, "Well, who are you?" And then having heard that it was my girlfriend, my mother started crying. And so I felt quite sad at this, quite felt touched and sad by this. Because for myself, I wanted to have a girlfriend, but my mother wanted me to ordain. And so at a certain point, I went to visit home, and my mother suggested it was time for me to ordain, and my siblings agreed, and it was a plan that I would ordain for 1 month because I still had a girlfriend at that time. And I thought, well, I can ordain for 1 month and offer that to my mother and father, and that will be enough. And at that time, Wat Mapjan had no Uposatha Hall where we are now, and it didn't have really any electricity. And I had one friend who had been ordained for one rains retreat already, Ajahn Amnoy, and he had practiced with what we call Kruba Ajahns, or great masters, great meditation masters. And this friend of mine, Ajahn Amnoy, he had practice with some of these great masters. He was also from Sisaket, from the northeast of Thailand. And I was learning that amongst these monks, they were talking about Venerable Ajahn Anand. He was quite famous already, that he was a monk who had practiced well, practiced correctly. And in that group of monks, they were saying that he was an arahant, fully awakened already. So my friends were talking like this, and I myself did not know, but they were saying that He was an arahant. And so my friends wanted to come to Wat Mapchan, but they didn't come because at that time, about 30 years ago, it wasn't just that any monk could come stay at Wat Mapchan. Venerable Ajahn Anand wouldn't accept just anybody. But to come stay at Wat Mapchan, one needed to have a reference or a connection, someone to suggest one to come here. And for myself, it was a friend of a friend had ordained at Wat Mapchan in the past. And this friend had said, oh, these two monks, they're my friends. And so myself, I was able to come to Wat Mapchan around April in the year 2538, which would be 30 years ago, this year being 2568. And so I hadn't been ordained for a whole month yet. It was a bit less than a month. So I ordained in March, came to Wat Mapchan in April. And since there was no Uposatha Hall at Wat Mapchan, it was not possible to ordain at Wat Mapchan. One had to ordain elsewhere. And Ajahn Anand's present kuti was not yet built. His present dwelling didn't exist yet. So he was at kuti number 12, which if you look at Sala Po or Sala Bodhinyana, it's the kuti down the hill to the right there behind Sala Po. And to arrive at Wat Mapchan from Banpe, the nearby town, we sat in the back of a pickup truck, what's called a songtao, and we arrived around 8 p.m. and Venerable Ajahn Anand was waiting for us at the bottom of Sala Po because that was the location where he received guests at that time. Because again, he didn't have his current dwelling, so he stayed in Kuti 12 and used Sala Po to receive guests. And so we looked at our monk identification cards, and he said that we were able to stay, but he didn't yet accept us as a monastery residence. And so that evening we stayed in the present day sewing room and medicine room at Sala Po. So that's where we stayed. And there was this one monk who came to talk to us that evening, Ajahn Samrung. And we were tired and thought to rest before the next day. But we actually ended up talking all the way till 3 a.m. Then it was time to do the morning chanting. When we got there, Ajahn Kalyano was already sitting meditation because at that time, Ajahn Kalyano was not yet in Melbourne. And Ajahn Achalo had yet to come to Wat Mapchan at that time. I think Ajahn Achalo arrived when I was about 3 rains retreats as a monk. And so these were the first Western disciples, Ajahn Kalyano being the first staying at Wat Mapchan since his 5th or 6th rains retreat. And then, so I stayed at Wat Mapchan and Lumpur Nun, or Venerable Ajahn Anand, had to see how we were and see what my habits were, because I ordained elsewhere. And so he would kind of assess and see if I could be a monastery resident, if I would be accepted. And so it came to the point where there were 12 resident monks at Wat Mapchan, mostly from northeast Thailand. And it was quite strict at that time. For the morning meal, it was just one meal and just eating only out of the alms bowl. And Venerable Ajahn Anand would inspect our alms bowl to see if there was anything left at the end of the meal, if we had eaten everything. And there was one monk who warned me that you had to eat everything, and then once you'd eaten, you had to brush your teeth before noon as well, because if there was any food stuck in your teeth, and then if you swallowed that food stuck in the teeth along with your saliva after the time of noon, then it would be a vinaya offense. So you had to clean your mouth before noon, so that you wouldn't make an offense. And then there was the chore time. Since there was no posada hall, there was cleaning the salapo, the eating hall. The front of the monastery was not yet what it is today. Like the area where lay people give alms belonged to someone else at that point. There were three large linchi trees, which is a type of fruit tree. And those three trees are still there, but they're not giving fruit because they're not being tended to or cared for like they were before. So there's that, the front of the monastery there belonging to another owner. And later on, Venerable Ajahnan purchased that piece of land so that it was a place where nowadays people can come give alms. So Wat Mapchan was very strict back in those days. One did not read the news at all. There were no newspapers. There was no newspapers at all. And of course, no social media, no phones at all as well. Also no electricity. There were some battery-powered yellow lights. I forget which brand of battery, maybe Panasonic, but they weren't that bright. And they were snake bites, or snakes that bit the monks or people here, but no deaths by snake bite. And then each kuti, each monk's dwelling, had a walking path. And all the walking paths had a deeply ingrained track where the monk would walk meditation, like a ground down line in the dirt where they would walk. And so this showed that the monks were diligent in their practice. And this was the custom of the masters to inspect the walking path of the monks in the monastery to see if they were really practicing. And if there is a deeply ingrained line in the dirt there, then it would mean that the monks in that monastery would practice doing a lot of walking meditation. Then in the evening, about 6 or 6:30 p.m., we'd come to sit meditation. And then maybe around 8 p.m., we'd start the chanting, chant for 45 minutes. Then Venerable Ajahnan would give a talk. Maybe he would give a talk for 45 minutes or an hour. And then after that, we'd walk meditation. And we'd finish around 11 p.m. every day. So at that time, Venerable Ajahnan was quite strong and healthy, and we would sit in meditation together at Salapo, and Ajahnan would sit there in front of the Buddha shrine, and there weren't many lay people that would visit, and just 12 monks, so that small area was sufficient to fit all of us. And the alms round was a fair distance. We'd leave around 5:45 a.m. and return maybe around 8 a.m. And so the car that would help us in the area of Banpei, it was a Toyota brand. And it was similar to a Songtail, but much smaller. But with about 4 monks and a basket of food, it'd be quite cramped. It was quite small. It wasn't like the vans that we have nowadays. And then the food, the monks wouldn't eat a lot, maybe just one bag of food per monk. And there weren't many lay people that would visit the monastery. So nowadays there's a lot of lay supporters that come to visit the monastery. You see Venerable Ajahnan has a lot of parami, a lot of spiritual virtues, and many disciples want to come practice here. And then they see that there's many monks, like 40, 50, 60 monks here. And so they have sympathy for the monks and offer food for the monks. But back in those days, it was a lot less. So the monastery is quite focused on meditation. There wasn't much building going on. And then at the point where they were building the Oposita Hall, that was the big building project. And so once alms round and eating was done, we would hurry to go walk meditation after eating. And we'd have some time for walking, and then 2 to 3 p.m. would be an hour of sitting, then about 3 to 4:45 would be the chore time. And sometimes there'd be like a special work project. And Venerable Ajahn Somchai, he was quite clean, quite focused on cleanliness. So if we'd clean a bathroom, we'd just scrub and clean the whole bathroom. And after it was all clean, we had to take a cloth and wipe down all the excess water to make it dry and make the ground dry as well. Because if it wasn't dry and someone came to use the bathroom when it was still wet, they would feel that it was dirty. And for the senior monks or for the great master, one would take very good care of the bowl, like carrying the bowl, cleaning it, wiping it down, putting it in the sun, then wiping it down again. So the bowl had to be very clean. And then the bowl would be stored in the master's dwelling. And so these senior monks from that time, they're all abbots now. But for myself, I haven't really gone anywhere. I met the great master already. And so having met the great master, one must have effort. One must embrace or hold on to the feet or the ankles of the great master and follow their teachings, not to go anywhere. wherever you go, then you take the teachings with you. So whether you're in Singapore, Malaysia, Australia, or anywhere in the world, you can take these teachings of the great master and practice them wherever you are. Because we see that having been born already, then all of us in the world, or all of us here on this retreat, is there anyone who can say that they don't have any suffering at all? Is there anyone on this retreat who can really say that they don't suffer at all, or don't have any dukkha? So is there anyone who can say that? So there probably isn't, because we all have suffering. Like we get headaches, we feel hungry. These are just little kinds of dukkha. They're not big kinds of suffering. Just the normal suffering of the sankharas, of conditioned formations. Or we eat some food and we get a stomach ache. This is how it is to have sankharas. So there's one occasion, I was at a branch monastery, which is the present day monastery of Ajahn Sombun. I went for alms round and I was just there alone, living there alone. Because at that time, Wat Mapchan didn't have many monks, and a lay person had offered this land up in the north of Thailand to Ajahn Kalyano. And then this place was named Doi Akinchino, or Wat Doi Akinchino, Akinchino being the Pali name of Venerable Ajahn Anand. But then after that, Ajahn Kalyano went to Australia, where he has a monastery now. So there was no one there to stay at this monastery in northern Thailand. So I was sent to live there, and I was there alone and ate some of this food there. And the food had been spoiled, so I got a stomach ache. I didn't know how to treat it. There were no doctors. I had no telephone. And so I just had the Dhamma to care for me. And so I used the Dhamma to care for myself, sat meditation. And after 2 hours, I didn't feel any better. It was evening already. And I was alone there. I thought, well, if I die, then I die. I just sit meditation, and I can just die sitting meditation. If I die, I die. But as it turns out, I did not die. I sat for meditation for a couple hours. I went to lie down. When I woke up, it was still dark, and I didn't have a clock, so I didn't know what time it was. So I just kept sitting meditation further from that point. So I was sitting meditation there and was recollecting the teaching of Venerable Ajahn Chah, a teaching that Venerable Ajahn Anand would often repeat, that it's only dukkha that arises, it's only dukkha that stays, it's only dukkha that passes away. Aside from dukkha, there's nothing that arises. Aside from dukkha, there's nothing that ceases. And so this is something Venerable Ajahn Anand would teach a lot in that time. It's a teaching that comes from the suttas, perhaps number 25 of a certain book in the suttas. It's the Vajira Teri Sutta. So it's an arahant bhikkhuni who had attained the Dhamma already. She was an arahant named Vajira Teri. And she entered jhana, sitting meditation, or meditating in deep absorption. And Mara, the god of delusion, wanted to make her scared. But this wasn't possible because she was an arahant. She was beyond fear. But Mara didn't know this, so Mara tried to arouse fear in her. But then once Mara understood that she was an arahant, then Mara ran away. And after this encounter, then this Dhamma phrase arose in her mind, that it's only suffering that arises, only suffering that persists, and only suffering that fades away. Aside from suffering, there's nothing that arises. Aside from suffering, there's nothing that ceases. And so this dukkha that arises, it's this very body. Sometimes we're sitting here, we feel at ease, we don't feel much suffering, or we don't feel any suffering, but we sit for a long time and then our leg starts to hurt. And that's dukkha. Then we change posture, that dukkha fades away. Or maybe we're hungry, or thirsty, and then we eat or drink, and then that dukkha subsides. So these are small kinds of suffering. So any being who has a body has suffering like this. So what do we then do to have no suffering? So we need to have effort to care for our health, to care for our body, to have mindfulness, to know oneself, to know one's body. Like if we do too much activity, or we lift something very heavy in the incorrect way, then our body can hurt. So we need to have this kind of mindfulness with us all the time, this kind of daily life or normal mindfulness. Like if we walk the wrong way, or walk with the wrong kind of shoes, or walk without mindfulness, we can get into an accident. So we need to have this kind of normal daily mindfulness with us. So we need to have this mindfulness to live our lives. So this isn't even talking about the level of Dhamma practice yet, but we need to have mindfulness with walking, driving a car, eating, speaking. So this is the kind of daily mindfulness we have to have all the time. But once we establish that well, then we come to practice Dhamma, then it's not difficult. We can have this kind of continuous or daily mindfulness, and then it's not difficult for samadhi to arise. But then there's this other type of suffering. Because we have birth already, then we must meet with old age, sickness, and death. And these are the big types of suffering. This kind of suffering that everyone has to meet with. So having been born, we must meet with aging, sickness, and death. We can't escape from that. these little types of suffering we can avoid with certain kinds of effort, like if we care for our body well. Like some people we might hear and get cancer, and they say, oh, it's because this person ate this particular food a lot, or they got diabetes because of certain foods they ate, and so on. Like things like very fatty food, very sugary food. And so having heard that, then we know, oh, we shouldn't eat that, like pork fat, very fatty pork. Some people like that a lot. And so we need to have wisdom. And if we have wisdom, then we will avoid that. We won't take it. And so this kind of suffering, we are able to avoid. But old age, sickness, and death, we're not able to avoid that. So what should we then do? Should we just be afraid of it? Or what should we do? Or we put up a fight. And how do we do that? Well, we do it by relying on the teachings of the fully self-awakened Buddha, who taught these four noble truths, the truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of suffering, the truth of the cessation of suffering, and the truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. So we know suffering. We know we have this body, and we know it. We know, oh, this is suffering. And having known it already, then we practice to bring about the end of that suffering. And then we think, well, how do we practice? We walk and sit meditation. We sit every day. We come to practice like we're doing on this retreat. We do sitting meditation, walking meditation. We can walk for 4 or 5 minutes, and then our mind starts to become peaceful. And then we can contemplate the Dhamma of the great masters, of the Kruba Ajahns, that, oh, there's suffering like this, and so we shouldn't cling. And, oh, this is the cause of suffering. This cause should be abandoned, should not be clung to. And then the mind starts to get strength and energy. The mind starts to gather in samadhi. Then the mind has the strength to contemplate, to overcome these causes of suffering. So when the mind has a lot of strength, we can overcome dukkha, we can know and see dukkha according to how the great masters have taught. Because we see that the great masters taught to contemplate, and so we use this Dhamma that we've learned from the great masters to put up a fight. We don't give up. We don't run away. We don't think, oh, I'm too old, I can't do it. But we can do it. We can sit or walk for 10 minutes and sit meditation. We can practice like walking for 10 minutes and then sitting. We can practice all throughout the day like this. And we really dedicate ourselves to practice. We're not interested in other things. And if our children come home and criticize us for not taking care of household affairs, like cleaning the house and so on, but we think that, well, we might die at any time. So we have to practice to be able to see according to how the great masters have taught, to know and see the Dhamma, to know and understand what the great masters have taught us. So we see the path. It's like when we see a very tall mountain. The peak of the mountain is covered in clouds, but we know that this is the right path to go. So we walk on that path. So we know the way already. So what's left is that we have to do it, and we can't give up. So we don't doubt about it, we don't wonder about it. But we've already been taught, well, to sit meditation like this, to walk meditation like this. So we don't have to doubt about it, we don't have to wonder. Just do it, and don't give up. Sometimes we might wonder, well, why do we have to do it like this? Why should we do this? We have to abandon these doubts, to put them down. Just do the practice, to sit meditation, Bhutto, 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 to walk meditation, Bhut with the left foot, Bhutto with the right foot, Bhutto. And after 1, 2, 3, or 4 hours, then we have to become peaceful at some point. So we do this with sincerity. If we do it in just a casual way, then we get casual results. But if we do it in a really sincere way, then we get sincere results. Then we're able to know and see, just as the great masters have taught. So if we do it in a sincere way, then we'll get results for sure, if we do it without giving up. So we've listened to the Dhamma of the Buddha a lot already. Venerable Ajahn Anand has been teaching online for about 10 years or so now. So we've likely listened to a lot of teachings already. So all that's left for us to do is to truly practice just that much, to really practice. So if we're 50 years old, we might have about 30 years or so left before we die. And the days are constantly coming and going, arising and ceasing. Like today, it's past 3 p.m. already. So today is almost gone. It's another day that's almost passed by. So knowing this already, then we really apply ourselves to have mindfulness. Again, people might come criticize us that we're not interested in other things, but we have this firm belief in the Dhamma of the Buddha, the Dhamma of the great masters, the Dhamma of Venerable Ajahn Anand. So we have this great confidence, and so we don't abandon this path, but we follow the path, we walk this path. Then one day we're able to see the truth, to see the Dhamma. So that should be enough for today. So, hey, Wang.